The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday to everybody who's listening out there. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. You guys know where First String Sports is, on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side. This is definitely the place to be. Liberty Madera, Letterman's Jacket, I'm looking at. Speaking of Liberty Madera, I guess I'll say right now, after the break, we're going to be talking with Liberty Madera head coach Mike Nolte. How about that? I see Fresno Christian, Sanger, Clovis West, obviously all the track schools, and Selma, Woodlake, Central, Kalinga. So First String Sports, the only place we could get your Letterman's Jacket here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue. And also, equipment. You got everything that you need. You know, we're hitting really nice weather here, hopefully, for the next couple of weeks before it gets super, super cold. I don't know. Does it get super, super cold in the Central Valley? No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. But anyway, thanks to First String Sports for being our day one sponsors. You can follow me on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors, or at 1430 ESPN. Speaking of weather, thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, right now it's a nice 66 degrees outside with a high of 82. And how about yesterday and the day before? Thursday and Friday, we hit the 90s, and just it didn't seem right. It did not seem right. So I think it's safe to say no more 90-degree weather for the rest of the year. All right. I mentioned that we're going to be talking with head coach Mike Nolte of Liberty Madera. On Thursday, they defeated Riverdale 49-0, but next week they take on Chowchilla for the Northwest Sequoia League title. That's going to be a really, really good football game. Excited to talk to Coach Nolte about that. He has three Central Section titles as well. An excellent coach. After that, around 10:35 or so, Cam Worrell's coming on. Love to bring on Cam once a year, and he's you guys know Cam obviously from his Chowchilla days. Look at that. Look at all these nice flowed sequences here. Cam played at Chowchilla, Fresno City before he came back to Fresno State. NFL guy, Chicago Bears, Miami Dolphins. He's a sideline reporter for the Fresno State Bulldogs broadcasting team. Cam has a great perspective on all three phases, I guess you can say, of football: high school, college, and the NFL. At the top of hour number two, got a really good wide receiver from Central. Central coming off a huge win against Clovis West, 27-15. Braylon Hall. He's the number one receiver. He had eight catches for 196 yards in that huge win. Has over 1,000 yards already, 12 touchdowns, which I believe leads the Central Section. The dude is a stud. Excited to talk to him. That's going to be at the top of hour number two, around 11:05 or so. And at the bottom of the hour, Gabe Camarillo. I usually bring him on right after I do my intro and we break down games. But as we're getting super, super close to knowing who the playoff teams are, where the rankings are going to be, one more week of the regular season before all that comes out, I believe on Saturday afternoon, the playoffs come out from the CIF Central Section. But Gabe and I are going to be talking about all the cool stuff that we saw this week. We were able to go to that Thursday Central and Clovis West game. Last night, we broadcasted Justin Garza and San Joaquin Memorial. Justin Garza won 38-10 in that one. Yeah, we're going to be breaking down who the playoff projections are as well. We've been talking about that since mid-August, maybe even before that. But it's always great to bring on Gabe. He brings a great perspective as well. So let's talk about a few games this week. There were, there were about eight games that happened on Thursday. Sanger defeated Bullard 42-14. Sets up nicely for Sanger getting a high seed, maybe a 4 or 5 seed. But Sanger, talked about them a lot. They're clicking this year. They are definitely a Division I team to contend with. They have a huge offensive line. They got Isaiah Robles, their running back, is one of the tops in the Central Section. So Sanger's looking really, really strong this season. And they defeated Bullard 42-14. I mentioned the Liberty Madera score 49-0 over Riverdale. Delano defeated McFarland 48-0. Tehachapi, they are undefeated. They are now 9-0. Defeated West 38-13 in the game that we covered. Gabe and I were able to watch, I should say. Central defeated Clovis West 27-15. That was a back and forth game. It was 14-3 after the first quarter. Clovis West came back, and Central got a pick six. They did a really good job balancing their run game and their passing game. So the Grizzlies, where the Grizzlies end up? Well, they're 3-1. Clovis North is 4-0, and Clovis North defeated Buchanan 28-3. That sets up a huge Thursday night matchup between Clovis North and Central for the track title. If Central wins, they'll share a track title with Clovis North. Gabe and I will be breaking down that game a little bit more around 11:30 or so. And Stockdale defeated Independence 21-19. And how about last night? Well, Justin Garza again defeated San Joaquin Memorial 38-10. Caleb Matthews, he's an excellent, excellent quarterback. He was poised. He was accurate. He could run the ball. He's a dual threat. They don't have a lot of designed running plays, but Caleb Matthews can do it all. He ran for a 12-yard touchdown, passed for four touchdowns in that game. So Garza looking like they might make Division II. They are currently 5-4. They are a base D3 team, so we'll see where they end up. Madera defeated Edison. Coyotes got a good team. Coach Palinelli's doing an excellent job. Defeated Edison 42-21. In East Sequoia League action, Corcoran over Strathmore 20-14. Orange Cove defeated Farmersville 50-0. And Woodlake defeated Orosi 22-21. That's pretty important. Orosi was 8-0. They were undefeated. They're having an excellent season. Woodlake is finally healthy. Woodlake decided to go for two after they scored a touchdown to make it 21-20 and got the conversion. So the Tigers prevail over Orosi. Redwood defeated Golden West 35-7. In the Mountain League at the coast, Aurora Grande 56, Santa Ynez 24, Mission Prep 21, Rigetti 12. A little surprised by how close that score was. Mission Prep's looking like a strong Division II team, I believe. Division III team. Napomo defeated Paso Robles 34-21, and St. Joseph will be a Division I team. Defeated Lompoc 36-0. In Northwest Yosemite League action, Hoover beat Madera South 38-27. Madera South remains winless on the season, and they took a 14-0 lead. Hoover is able to tie it at halftime and then prevail 38-27. Hoover got three defensive touchdowns / special teams touchdowns in that one, so congrats to the Patriots. Roosevelt defeated Sanger West 56-25. Sunnyside defeated McLean 43-8, so the Wildcats are going to be the North Yosemite League champions. In Northwest Sequoia League action, Carruthers, they lost to Chowchilla, just like the Woodlake and Orosi game. Chowchilla decided to go for two and got it and beat Carruthers. But Hunter Babb, a running back for Carruthers, who is second in the nation, yes, in the nation in rushing, had another 300-yard game. Another one. Pretty, pretty darn impressive. And four touchdowns on 28 carries. 309 yards, to be exact. So Hunter Babb still putting up crazy numbers. But Chowchilla defeats Carruthers 32-31. Fowler all over Yosemite 48-12. Let's go to South Sequoia League action. Yeah, this game right here, I got to say a little about the Shafter and Kennedy game. So we've had that game earmarked for a long time. Shafter coming in undefeated, Kennedy with only one loss to Stockdale. That's for the South Sequoia League Championship. Shafter won 28-21. It was a 21-14 game late in the fourth quarter, and Shafter scored two touchdowns to win that one. However, there was a scary situation that happened in that game. Kennedy has a star running back named Jace DeMacklin, and he's only a sophomore. And according to Gabe Camarillo, who got some information down in Delano, he collapsed after he scored a touchdown before halftime, I believe. And he was a little bit unresponsive, was only able to move his head. So luckily, they were able to give him care right away. The ambulance took him to the hospital. So very, very scary situation. Coach Gerald Perucci of Shafter, who's been on the show, great guy, he took that moment and brought the teams together at midfield and actually prayed for the young man. So what – oh, man, it just – yeah, it just kind of hits you, right? And just to see – there was a picture that was tweeted out, and to see the teams bowing and some tears in some players' eyes and praying for the young man. It was just a very heartfelt and difficult situation. I got report this morning. I checked Twitter, and according to his parents, the McElblinn's parents, he is doing better. He's responsive. He's alert. So, you know, praise the Lord for that. So, we, you know, football kind of took a back seat to that one, and it always does. And, you know, always pray for health and safety for all the kids. So happy to hear that he is doing much, much better. All right, let's go down a little bit more. Frontier defeated Liberty, guys, in the Southwest Yosemite River League, 25-21. Huge, huge win for Frontier. They broke Liberty's, I think it was 37 games in a row. When we get to Gabe, we'll talk about that. 37 games in a row in league that Liberty had won. Frontier beat them. Talked a lot about Frontier this year. They got a really, really good team, and they jumped up in the rankings. Let me click over here. I believe they are they jumped up to number 3 overall in Division 1. So huge, huge wins for the Titans. They got an excellent quarterback in Mekhi Statler. Really, really good win for Frontier. Garces defeated Centennial 20-6. Bakersfield beat Ridgeview. I believe that game was like 43-0. Bakersfield Christian defeated Highland 46-12. Central Valley Christian defeated Washington Union 42-24. Exeter continued their perfect season. Defeated Sierra Pacific. Ooh, low scoring game, 12-7 in that one. Emmanuel shut out Hanford West 20-0. And in track action, Clovis East, coming off of that wild loss to Central last week, defeated Clovis 49-34. I don't have the stats yet. I'll try to look up those stats at the break. But, I mean, you got two really, really good quarterbacks in Ty Miller and Deegan Rose in that one. I'm sure they threw for points of plenty, a lot of touchdowns and a lot of yards in that one. And Clovis North was all over Buchanan. They beat them 28-3. Kalinga defeated Tranquility 59-0. Dos Palos over Fireball 14-6. Dinuba was in an upset. Yeah, it could be. Defeated Tulare Union 35-28. Congrats to CJ Lester and his crew for that huge win. And Hanford, Mission Oak went for two and to take the lead, but Hanford was able, it was an incomplete pass. So Hanford prevails 35-34. That was a game they were up, I think, 14-0 at halftime. Lemoore defeated Tulare Western 29-0, and Kingsburg defeated Reedley 38-16. All right, a little bit of a breakdown in those games. Gabe and I are going to be talking about those games and much, much more, those playoff predictions. Up next after the break, we're going to be talking with Liberty Madera coach Mike Nolte here on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back. This is Central Valley Sports Report at 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters. We're going to be talking with Liberty Madera head coach Mike Nolte. Coached three section titles in 09, 18, and 2019. The Hawks are currently 7-2, 5-1 in league. They defeated Riverdale on Thursday night, and we'll take on Chowchilla this coming Friday for the league title. Thanks, coach, for this late this late acceptance on talking with me. I sent that text last night, close to midnight. Sometimes I lose track of time, and but thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Paul.
All right, so your game was on Thursday. So I know a lot of coaches, you know, take advantage of that Friday. Maybe they hunker down in their office and watch game film or go to a game or hang out with the family. What did you do last night?
Yeah, we went and watched Chowchilla and Carruthers play. It was a great game.
Yeah, so just I got a few texts from people about that game, but from your perspective, you know, what type of game was that? I know that it came down to the wire, and again, Hunter Babb is an exceptional running back, but how do you describe last night's game?
Well, I saw two very, very good football teams last night going back and forth, and, you know, Chowchilla jumped out early, and, you know, then Carruthers battled back like, you know, you expect them to, and then they took the lead late, and then Chowchilla, of course, battled back and went for 2 points and got it. It was really a great game by two really good teams.
So on your win on Thursday night, you defeated Riverdale 49-0. What was clicking? Obviously, the offense played lights out, but so did the defense.
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, going into the game, you know, their quarterback, Camacho, is pretty mobile kid and runs around really well and keeps his eyes downfield and hits some open receivers as he sort of scrambles. But we were able to get a lot of pressure on him and make that difficult for him. Offensively, I think we played very well. We were pretty physical in that game, and the kids responded to the challenge that we had.
And you're primarily a running team, but were you guys able to move the football with your passing game on Thursday?
We completed a few passes and threw it down the field. It was score pretty quick, so you know you don't want to do too much of that.
Yeah. Who were some of the standout players? Who are some dudes that scored some touchdowns for you on Thursday?
I think Caleb Sisko had 4 touchdowns and 175 or so yards. The rest of them was sort of, you know, by committee. Brody Harlow had a good game, good solid game running the football again. And Talon Lamatina at fullback is a pretty good force for us as well. And we got a lot of guys in the game, so that's always good for practice the next week. Everybody gets a little bit more excited, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And according to Max Preps, through 7 games, obviously last night's or Thursday's stats aren't in yet. You guys have rushed for 1,769 yards for an average of 17.5 per carry and 23 total touchdowns. That's been your MO for a while, right? Just be physical, pound it on the ground, and not necessarily one guy that you give the ball to say 30 times, but just you like to spread the love.
No, we do, and we got some good kids to spread that love to, and it's it's always good when you have more guys than one to give the ball to. That way, you know, you keep the defense balanced and they can't load up on one guy. But it's been a fun, interesting year.
Fun and interesting. Talking with Liberty Madera head coach Mike Nolte. All right, so. Setting up a huge matchup next Friday against Chowchilla, who's 6-0 in league. What type of challenges does the Tri present?
Well, they don't have a lot of guys, but the guys they do have are they got good size. They're physical. They run around. You know, they fly around on defense. Their offense they run is fast, and you know the quarterback. You know, is a dual threat guy. He can throw it. He can run it. And you know, we're going to have a lot to pay attention to. That's for sure on Friday night. But when we play Chowchilla, it's usually for something.
Is their offense similar to yours as far as formations? You know, they run the ball a lot as well. But is there what would be the differences between your two offenses?
I think there's definitely a lot of similarities. We line up under the center with our quarterback. They don't. We use three. Oh, they use their quarterback as their third runner. Where we have three guys, you know, that we can hand the ball off to. So I mean, there's definitely some similarities and some wing T concepts in both of us. But their formation's a little more spread out than ours is.
If people were to go watch your game, your home game next week against Chowchilla, just describe what your stadium looks like and what a packed crowd looks like at Liberty Madera.
Well, our community really turns out for the games, and it'll be senior night, so we'll have an extra big crowd there for that part to honor our seniors. And football in the Ranchos is a really great atmosphere, and I think our people all do a great job in supporting the Hawks and sort of loving what we do, you know?
Absolutely. And you're on a 4-game winning streak since that loss to Carruthers. I want to get your perspective coaching against Hunter Babb, who, you know, I saw him again. Are just getting those reports from Coach Ward, another 300-yard game for that kid, 6 touchdowns. So, you know, you're able to watch him again last night. What's the best way to describe that player, watching a player of that caliber?
You know, I think he's, you know, what's coming. That's the frustrating part about going against him. You know what's coming, and they do a great job up front. And he is a kid that can be a patient runner. I watched him last night attack the line of scrimmage like I hadn't seen all year out of him. And you know, he's impressive. You know, he's not a very big kid, but I'll tell you what, man, he knows how to run the football.
He does. I'm sure he gives coaches fits. And like you said, you know it's coming, but yeah, he still gets his yards and gets his touchdowns. One more question for you, Coach Nolte. Again, thanks for joining us. You're the school's athletic director as well. What works with the current playoff system, and what doesn't work?
Boy, that's a loaded question. Oh, man. You know, I don't know. Personally, I like the old system better. I think knowing what division you're going to play in all year is beneficial to everybody. And, you know, like there's always teams every year that are on the bubble between, you know, going up a division or going down a division based on their rankings. And, you know, I'm not convinced that the ranking system takes into account everything it should. I think it puts a lot of weight on wins and losses. You know, I know there's the competitive, you know, power ranking type aspect of it all, but you know, I'm just not sure that it takes everything into account. And you know, with all that said, I don't have a great answer on how to fix it, but you know, that's some of the things that are difficult. If you look at the playoffs, the way it's going to shape out, you're going to have a lot of, in our situation, you're going to have a lot of D5 teams in D4, and you're going to have a lot of D6 teams in D5. And, you know, the everybody left over is going to fall into D6. So, you know, I'm not sure it gives our section the best representative of each division.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely lots of talking points in that, and yeah, it's a wild and wacky process. And on one hand, it's fun to talk about. On the other hand, it could be very frustrating at times. But I know you have an excellent program there, Coach. Again, you're 7-2. You're going to be taking on Chowchilla this Friday at home. Guys, go check it out, man. That is going to be a great football game. Lots of running in that one. Lots of hard hitting action. So always great to catch up with you, Coach Nolte. Good luck.
All right. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You bet. All right. Coming up after their break, we're going to be talking with Cam Worrell on 1430 ESPN. Live here at First String Sports. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. So we broadcasted the game last night between Justin Garza and San Joaquin Memorial. We mentioned on air how there's lots of ways you can listen to all the cool stuff that's happening on 1430 ESPN. Obviously, your car at home. Got a little radio. Go to 1430 ESPN. There you go. You can also listen on the app, listen on the website. Just click listen live, and boom, you're there. It's been really neat over the years broadcasting games where parents will come up to me and say, you know what? My family lives in Kansas, and they've never really been able to watch their grandkid or somebody else, a friend, listen to them or watch them play, and they're able to do it. So definitely check that out if you're not by a radio. We're always available, 1430 ESPN. Time to bring on Cameron Worrell, Chowchilla grad, Fresno City. A lot of talk about Chowchilla today. Last week it was all about Hanford. This week's a lot about Chowchilla. Fresno City, Fresno State, Chicago Bears, Dolphins, sideline reporter for Fresno State, friend of the show for sure. Always enjoy my conversations with Cam. Cam, what's going on today?
Paul, what's up, man? Just, you know, another exciting night of high school football in the Central Valley last night, and Fresno State on a bye, so watching a little Ohio State Penn State on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was 3-0, right? Was Ohio State was up 3-0 last time I checked. What's the score now?
Yeah, Ohio State's up 10-3 now, 4 minutes left in the second quarter.
All right. So a defensive grind in that one. Are bye weeks, when you were a player, were bye weeks hard for you? If you're injured, obviously you need that rest. But, man, we're just kind of itching to get onto the field.
No. No. bye weeks were very welcome at either level, in college or in the NFL. Just because, it's not just games that kind of take a toll on you physically and mentally and emotionally, but, these guys started early August. So it's been a long grind of football every single day, physically and mentally. And then when you start, competition, it ratchets up a notch. And by the time that bye week comes, it's welcome. It's just a nice, it almost feels like, you take a month off, because you're in it every single day. You have the same routine, week in, week out. When you get that long break, it really is like a refresher. You feel mentally and physically refreshed and ready to attack the rest of the season. And I think, this bye week could not have come at a better time for this Fresno State football team. They're banged up. They have guys on both sides of the ball, starters, backups. Just beat up a little bit, and this bye week came at a perfect time for them to try to get healthy for this stretch run, which is going to be exciting. They have a lot of things that are still possible if they can continue to handle business.
And I think the Bulldogs, obviously, they need that rest. They need that bye week to get healed, like you said. But I'm going to talk about Fresno State a little bit later. How last night you guys were able to broadcast Clovis North and Buchanan, correct?
Yep.
And is it the second time you've seen Clovis North?
We had him the week zero, I guess, the opening week of the season back in August against San Joaquin Memorial, just a completely dominant performance. I think you guys were on the radio broadcast that night as well. And last night was the second time I got to see Clovis North in person. Just as physically dominant, just as skilled at the running back position. Play sound on both sides of the football. Don't make mistakes. And Buchanan played tough. Buchanan was able to move the football, with Gio Chiaramonte stepping in at quarterback last week and playing his second game this week. But Clovis North's just too physical, too many weapons, too many guys that can share the football with, and eventually just kind of wore that Buchanan team down.
So, I think North, we've talked about them a lot, and their offensive line is very physical, and those three running backs that they have, it's definitely a triple threat, and they'll pop it too. The quarterback will pop it every once in a while and set it up. So how did those three running backs do? McKay Madsen, Jackson Sinfell, and Andrew Chavez. How did they look?
Yeah, Andrew Chavez didn't really touch in on offense, played defense mostly. Jackson Sinfell had a big night last night, got in the end zone twice, and McKay Madsen kicked off scoring with the first touchdown of the game. But Jackson Sinfell got the bulk of the carries last night. McKay Madsen, I never got final stats, but he probably carried it 12 times. Sinfell probably carried it 22, 25 times. And, it's such a luxury to have a guy like Jackson Sinfell. He breaks off a couple, and then you sub him out, and McKay Madsen comes in, who's, just as skilled, maybe not quite as explosive, but he's a little bit bigger. And what's really impressive about McKay Madsen, for a junior, I know he plays linebacker as well. Not sure where he may end up in college. I think he's a Division I player for sure. But his ability to just kind of slide off of tackles, he kind of reminds me, he's got a little bit of that kind of Marshawn Lynch to him, where you never really get a clean shot on McKay Madsen. You never got a clean shot on Marshawn Lynch just because he was able to slip and slide his body in different positions to not allow you to take a clean shot. And McKay Madsen has some of those same skills. Runs hard, obviously. But both of those guys last night, they took one deep shot over the top. I think it was a 65 or 70-yard touchdown to Vinny Cordova, play action, deep ball, single coverage. Otherwise, it was ground and pound, and both of those running backs, you know, they played exactly how you expect them to play. You know, Jackson Sinfield carried the bulk of the touches last night, but McKay Madsen came in and spelled him and had success as well.
Well, McKay Madsen, he's a big boy. I saw him Thursday night. He was watching the Central and Clovis West game and ran into him and talking. He's at 225 pounds. He's a discus thrower, second in the state last year. So he is definitely a load. Do you think, Cam, that style of offense that the Clovis North runs, is it a style of offense that is built for the playoffs? I mean, what do you think are the ingredients that teams must have to make a serious run to a Central section title?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, being able to control the line of scrimmage on offense and defense, like, I know that quarterback play is much more important now than maybe it had been in the past. I mean, talking about historically, talking about football, but, you know, it still comes down to teams that can control the line of scrimmage. If you can keep your quarterback clean when he's throwing the ball, if you can get some push in the run game, like, those are things that translate to every level of football, and Clovis North has the ability to do that. Now, last night, they were a little bit one-dimensional, and I don't know if that was by design. I don't know if, you know, they got a lead and just kind of wanted to, you know, beat Buchanan down a little bit, you know, take time off the clock. They did bring in Braden Bitter, who usually plays exclusively on defense, and put him in as a tight end or a wing, and they just mowed Buchanan down on one series. So, you know, that's something that is hard to stop. If you can't get off the field because an offensive line is just grinding on you defensively, that's really, really hard. And then when Mario Cosma throws the ball, he's extremely accurate. I think he throws a really, really nice deep ball. And we'll see when they get into the playoffs. I mean, you know, they play in the track, and it's about as competitive as you can get in the Valley. Clovis East, extremely skilled. They were able to put points on the board against them. We'll see. Central's playing really, really good. You know, beat Clovis West Thursday night, and if Central's able to knock Clovis North off next week, they're co-track champs. So that's a big game to see, not just who wins the track, but, you know, who may end up as the number one seed in the Division I Central Section playoffs.
Yeah, Clovis North at 9-0. They're number one, obviously, in East. And the Cal Preps rankings, they're still number two. Even though Central beat them, Central's at number five. They have identical 7-2 records overall. It's pretty wild. So, yeah, that Thursday night matchup between Clovis North and Central is going to be a fun one to watch for sure. Let's switch gears to Fresno State. Cam, if I told you at the beginning of the college football season that Fresno State would be 5-1, what would you have said?
Yeah, they probably maybe took a road loss to Purdue, or they took a road loss to Wyoming. I would have said, I don't know if I expected that. I probably hoped that they would be able to do that. They could have, you know, dropped that one to Purdue and Wyoming. You know, they could be sitting in, with two losses, but, you know, one loss to the Mountain West, still right in the middle of it. Boise has a loss. Wyoming now has a loss. Air Force doesn't. UNLV doesn't, who come in next Saturday. So I would have said, yeah, the Fresno State's in a position to still do everything that they're trying to do in the 2023 season.
Yeah, sorry, I misspoke. 6-1. I cheated them a win. 6-1. The Bulldogs are 6-1 this season. Yeah, so the bye week and then next week is going to be a lot of fun. Pat Hill, Ring of Honor next Saturday. You know what, you know Pat very, very well. Obviously, you played for him, and then in the booth, he's an absolute riot to be around. He's so much fun. He's so insightful. He's, you know, deep down, he's a very caring person as well. I see him in between during timeouts. He's texting friends. He's getting updates from his sons. You know, he's just a great guy all around. What does Pat Hill mean to not only Fresno State, but to the Central Valley?
Yeah, man. the impact that Pat has made in the Valley, it really will last for generations. I mean, guys came here to play for Pat Hill who have stayed here and who have started businesses and started families and have put roots down here in the Central Valley. You know, one thing that, you know, I mean, Pat coached to win games. His program was built to make you the best version of a football player as you could possibly be. But, you know, because of the things that he taught, you became the best version of a person that you could be, a father, a business owner, an employee, you know, a husband. Like the lessons that he taught were life skills. And if you got through Pat Hill's program, like you're set up to have success. I mean, you know, he's softened now. I mean, he's in his 70s. He's a grandpa. He, you know, loves his family so much. He golfs. He, you know, that crazy Pat Hill that I played for, it's still there. It's still, he still has some moments of it, but, you know, he really was, you know, really hard to play for. And he was hard to play for because he expected so much out of you. And most of the time, you didn't really even expect it out of yourself when you got there. He pulled it out of you and really made you believe that you could be what he thought you could be. And if guys who made it through his program, I mean, you look at guys all throughout the Valley, the state of California, I mean, there are a lot of just successful, good people that came out of Pat Hill's program. And like I said, the impact that he's made on the Central Valley will really last for generations.
Yeah, he's definitely a family man now. It's a lot of fun to watch him, you know, send those text messages, like I said, and he even goes to soccer games. He's like, yeah, I had a soccer game. Got a soccer game tomorrow morning. Watch my grandson play. And now he's a soccer grandpa.
Yep.
I love to tell the story, Cam, of Coach Pat Hill eating M&Ms and pistachios during broadcast. And now I do a thing when I know Pat's going to join us for the broadcast where I bring him a bag of Bugles, right? So it's like those cone-shaped, you know, like almost like chips, right? And I would go back and forth between the original and the caramel flavor. And when I bring him the original, he would sound disappointed. He's like, Metters, what are you bringing me this stuff? Bring me the good stuff. Bring me the caramel Bugles, man. And he just inhales those things. It's amazing. Absolutely cracks me up. Have you experienced the quirkiness of Coach Hill as well? We know tough Coach Pat Hill, sensitive Pat Hill with his family. But are there some quirky things? Maybe, you know, put his hand through a chalkboard or something like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, quite a few of those. Yeah, I mean, put his hand through a whiteboard in Hawaii and tried to get his hand out of the whiteboard and could not get his hand out of the whiteboard. So he's yelling at halftime and giving the halftime speech as he's dragging this whiteboard around because he can't get his arm out of it. You know, the same game after the game against Hawaii, we lost, and he comes back in the locker room. I just told everybody that we're not going to lose another game for the rest of the season, that this team just promised me that we're not going to lose another game for the rest of the season. And we didn't lose another game for the rest of the season. My favorite, the one that impacted me the most, I think, was my senior year at Boise State. Boise State had beat us in 2001, and we went to Boise a Friday night game on ESPN, my senior year. We were looking for revenge, and we just got boat raced. Like, they beat us, I think it was 69-21 or something. Ryan Dinwiddie threw for like 400 yards. I mean, just a complete, we were totally outmatched. So we get on the plane, we fly home, we land at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and Pat Hill gets everybody off the bus. We go into the meeting room and we have a meeting at 5:30 in the morning, and basically said the same thing. We had five games left. We're not losing another game, period. And we did. We went on a run. We won five games, and then we ended up winning the bowl game, which was his first bowl win, 2002. you know, but that was, you know, he recognized him, and he's like, we're putting full pads on Monday, better be ready, because how this has been going is not going to continue. And sure enough, man, we played really good football after that. I don't think we had any close games, you know, into the season 5-0, and then beat Georgia Tech in the Silicon Valley Bowl. But, you know, the same type of passion that he coached with is the same type of passion that you now see him as a grandpa, you know, as someone who loves his family so much and, you know, doesn't have to take care of 105 college students anymore. He can take care of his sons and grandkids, and it's pretty cool to see how he's transitioned into the next phase of his life. And I can't wait for him to get his name up on Bulldog Stadium or Valley Children's Stadium forever. It's well deserved, and could not be happier for him to get that recognition that he totally deserves.
Absolutely, you nailed it. He's an icon for sure. Next week's going to be really, really special. Cam, I know that mental health is very important to you after your career in the NFL, where you're dealing with injuries and expectations and, you know, trying to survive and starting a family and all those different things that go with being a professional athlete. But you've championed mental health on social media and very open about it. Talk a little bit, Cam, about your own journey and how important you feel that mental health is.
Yeah, you know, it was always kind of a fear that, you know, the game of football would impact my brain in a certain way and would have a negative effect on just my ability, my ability to be a good father, husband, you know, live a normal life. And you know, luckily I have not experienced any of those things. You know, there are things that impact you that, you know, at like 23, 25, 20, you don't really understand or notice necessarily the impact that these things have on you and the things that you hold on to that can affect you later down the road. And you know, shoot, man, one of the best things I've ever done for myself, for my family, my wife, my kids, is start seeing a therapist. It's been about 2.5 years. And, you know, even if I just go in and just complain about work, you know, even if I just go in and complain about whatever, it's, you have someone there listening to you who's trained and can understand and can help you work through different situations. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of just kind of unresolved trauma that I didn't even understand I was holding on to. And I've been able to release that energy that, you know, if you don't release it, it's just going to stay with you and it's going to affect the way that you think about or process situations. And you know, I was, you know, diagnosed with an anxiety disorder and, you know, I've kind of worked my way through that. It's really hard to, you know, to not even know that you're dealing with this anxiety disorder and you're, you know, doing broadcasts and going on live TV and hosting events. It's very trying. And to now kind of take a step back and understand, you know, why I felt, you know, ways that I felt and things that I can do to help myself not feel those things or have those same type of thoughts or anxieties. It's been, man, so great. And like I said, even if you just go and talk to somebody and just kind of get things off your chest that are bugging you that may not be that important, but you just got to get them off your chest, you know, sometimes it's just that. And I would recommend to everybody, and I do recommend to everybody, you know, if you have something going on, just go talk to somebody. You know, it doesn't mean anything. I think that we're kind of getting away from that stigma, right, of, oh, you see a psychologist or you see a therapist, there's got to be something wrong with you. Like, I think we're getting away from that, and I hope we continue to get away from that and people understand that, you know, this is just a part of self-care. And there are resources out there to help you navigate this. You know, this is a hard system that we live in. You know, it's hard to be you know, everything that you're trying to be, a father, a provider, an employee, or a business owner, you know, like these things are really, really hard. And there are people out there that can help you navigate these situations. Or, you know, I lost my dad. He was 67, you know, it'll be 2 years in December. You don't understand the impact that something like that makes on you until you experience. And I am so thankful that I had somebody that I could trust and confide in to work through that pain, because it's pain and it brings up a lot of things that you didn't necessarily, you know, think would come up. And I'm so grateful that I had someone that I could confide in, because it really helped me, you know, navigate through that very painful period. So, you know, like I said, I hope we're getting away from any sort of stigma that exists around, you know, taking care of your mental health. And I hope we continue to understand that these are just resources that are there to help people navigate situations when they need them.
Well, well said, my friend. I appreciate you greatly using your platform for good. And you're a great guy, and we always love hearing from you. And, you know, you love your friends, you love your family, and you love football. And I really appreciate you being open and honest about that. And go Dogs. I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Paul. Anytime, man.
You bet. You bet. That was Cam Orrell. Yeah, very open and honest about that. And I asked him beforehand if it was okay for me to ask that question. And he replied, I'm an open book. So really appreciate Cam Orrell. Big week next week when they put Pat Hill in the Ring of Honor. So anyway, coming up after the break, at the top of the hour, we're going to be talking with a stud receiver from Central High. Braylon Hall is on the show coming up on 1430 ESPN.
Listen to Home Field Advantage Monday through Thursday at 3 p.m. In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue, in between Herndon and Sierra. Definitely the place to be. One of the cool things that I love about this place, many cool things, but when you walk in and keep going straight, Letterman's Jacket Room is on the right-hand side where I do my show, but they have chairs. They have those sit-down chairs that you bring for picnics and Saturday soccer games in the morning when you got little ones. But they all have logos of teams in the central section. And then if you keep going even farther, got a hat. Hat selection there. So a lot of the Clovis schools, Fresno schools. So, it's definitely your high school sports headquarters, and so is 1430 ESPN. So we got Braylon Hall here. He's central wide receiver, three-year starter. You played your freshman year on varsity a little bit, Braylon?
Correct, I did.
The whole season?
Yes.
So from the beginning,
yes.
You've been on varsity.
Yes.
Awesome. So on Thursday, his Grizzlies beat Clovis West 27-15. He had 8 catches for 192 yards, and got a lot of love, Braylon, man. That was awesome to see after the game. Thursday game, so a lot of people are going to be at that game. Talk about that game, how great it was. Going in, you knew Clovis West, they got some studs over there, but, I mean, you guys weren't intimidated. You guys played a well-rounded football game.
Yeah, going into the game, we knew that if we execute on offense, get turnovers on defense, the game should go our way. The whole entire week, Coach Biggs really just preached effort and energy and let the game take care of itself.
Are you normally sore after the day after football game? So it was Thursday, so
correct.
You got yesterday to recoup.
Yes.
So are you normally pretty sore?
First day after, I feel perfectly fine. I can go play another football game. Second day hits, I wake up, and I feel like an old man trying to get out the bed.
That was this morning?
Yes, exactly. Exactly this morning.
It was funny. You and I were talking off air, and you said, yeah, I kind of learned something. Earlier in your career, you were fighting for yards, right?
Correct.
You catch a short pass or whatever, and you're fighting. You got three or four guys trying to drag you down. But you kind of learned, you know, to pick your spots because you got injured.
Exactly.
Your sophomore year. What happened your sophomore year?
Sophomore year, playing against Buchanan, I caught a little narrow route, a little hitch route. Got rolled up by one dude, refused to go down. 2, 3, 4 more came and rolled me up, and my ankle went flat and ended up with a high ankle sprain. I was out for a little while.
So you learned.
I learned my lesson the hard way.
But I tell you what, on Thursday's game, you didn't score any touchdowns. You know, you let your running backs, so to speak, hit pay dirt on that. But you had a huge game. You had some big catches. The one that I remember, well, there were two. There was one, that long one that set up a touchdown run. I think you guys were around the 20-yard line on the opposite side, caught the ball over the middle, and were tackled maybe about the 40, 35-yard line, something like
roughly.
That. Yeah, roughly. And then you caught a pass that, in my mind, sealed the win. I think it was an inside slam. Yep. You caught it over the middle. Yeah, and it was a low pass.
Yes.
Right? You had to go down and get that. And what were you thinking? Let's say on that
correct.
Pass, what were you thinking? Because you were pretty open.
Yes.
Marquez put a little bit low, but you adjusted. What were you thinking on that play?
So going into that play, I knew what the play was off, so you knew my route was. Knew where I had to get to. I like that route a lot. I'm very confident in that route. So I knew as long as I get to the middle, he could put it anywhere and I'll go get it. Because every day I practice throughout the week, I always say work on low balls, like throw the ball to the ground, throw the ball to the dirt, like make me go get it, throw the ball high, throw the ball here, make me adjust to it, maybe go catch the ball. So it's like a routine thing, diving, making those plays. It's what I expect myself to do.
So it's a play that you practice.
Correct.
And then in the game, you're mentally and physically prepared for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
How tough is it, Braylon? And is it easier for you? Obviously, you're a senior and you've played a lot of varsity football, but the mental part of the game. So how has that changed for you coming from, you know, a freshman and sophomore? Were you young and you've always had, you know, there's been a lot of really good wide receivers at Central, but the mental part of the game, right, as opposed to the physical part of the game of, like, not getting too high or too low on certain situations, just playing the play in front of you. Is that something that's been easy for you, or is this something that you've had to learn?
When I was younger, freshman, sophomore year, I would definitely say I was a lot more antsy and a lot more, like, jittery. And as I became a junior and now a senior, I definitely say I've calmed down and relaxed a lot more, because this year I've taken on a very large load of being the leader of the team and being the captain of the team. And when things go bad or things are going the way we want it to be, everyone's looking at me, so I know I have to keep my composure and keep my team rallied and ready to go. So they look at me, and if they see me down, they're going to get down. And if they see me up, they're going to keep up and just keep their composure.
Talking with Braylon Hall, wide receiver at Central. Has that been a huge process for you, though? Like, younger, you play with more emotion, but now, I mean, you play with emotion after you cut that pass. You know, you gave that first down. You gave that first down sign to let everybody know. But, you know, you feel like the younger guys maybe, you know, you got some, you know, a couple really good sophomores on your team as well. You think the young guys now look up to you, or you got to take on more of a leadership role?
I would definitely say look up to me in aspects. Like, they always ask me questions. Oh, what's this route? Oh, how do I get better at this? How do I get better at that? So I'm always helping them out, helping them to get better and perfect themselves in their own ways and shape or form.
David Marquez.
Yes.
He's tuned it up.
Dog.
Dog is right. So right now, just looking at his stats, he became, I think Biggs went with him midway through the Buchanan game, right? I think it was 0-0 at half.
Yeah, he came in the close high game towards the end, put away some good drives, but obviously it fell short of that game. And then Buchanan game, they're going back and forth, and Dave made a few plays that stood out, and he kept it. He stayed in, and we just got rolling with Dave and went with him for the rest of the time.
On the season so far, he's completed, which is super impressive, 72% of his passes. He's 70 for 99, and he's a running threat as well. So he's thrown for 9 touchdowns. I think he has, what, 9 rushing touchdowns as well? Nine rushing touchdowns as well. Do you feel like he's, you know, rejuvenated the offense? He's the same class as you. You're both seniors. So, I mean, how much do you trust him, so to speak?
Me and Dave, we actually have an English class where we're partners together. So we talk about plays, talk about football all day, every day. I trust him a lot. Dave, he's been around since freshman year. He knows the offense, knows the system. He's the guy who's going to go out there and make plays and make the smart reads. And he's not afraid to run the ball either, which opens up our offense a way a lot more. And people have to respect him and respect the way he runs. And you can't just, oh, I'm going to go cover the deep ball. Oh, wait, the quarterback can run as well. That's a problem as well.
Are you the type of guy that goes into a huddle and says, I'm open every play, right? That's a new thing in the NFL. I'm open every play. Are you one of those guys? Or like, Dave, just give me the ball. I'll take care of the rest.
I'll tell Dave, I'm like, listen. At the end of the day, you know I'm open. Unless you handle the rest, if you feel you need to run, hey, go run, go slide, go get you a few yards. Protect yourself, be safe. But when in doubt, just know you always look for me and I'll always be open.
Number 18.
Yes,
number 18 is open 24/7. What's your favorite type of route to run?
I really like running double moves. I really love running post corners or even slot fades a lot because you can give a DB a lot of different looks when it comes to those two routes.
What's the best catch that you've ever made?
Best catch I've ever made. Sophomore year against Buchanan before I got hurt.
Okay.
Before the half, I was coming across the middle. Ran a post route, actually. And I was about 15, 20 yards deep into the route. The ball came and just came right at me in the blink of an eye. Threw one arm up, stuck to my hand, threw it in the air, bobbled it, caught it, dove, went for the first down. That was definitely one of my highlights of my career for catches so far.
Do you practice one-hand catches? You do some of that stuff?
Every catch that I make in the game, I definitely say I practice all day, every day. Practice when I'm working out, when I'm by myself. So when the situation arises and it just comes, it's just a natural reaction.
How much does confidence play in the game of football? You got a DB, and I've seen it against you, right? You got a DB right in your face like
Correct.
This. Like, what's going through your mind? Obviously, you don't want to go offside. You gotta watch the count. You got to do different things, maybe even sneak a peek at the safeties, right? So what is going through your mind? You're like, all right, I got to beat this guy, or I got to run the right route. What's going through your mind?
Confidence-wise, per se, for me personally, I just feel like I know everything I do and all my training that I've done in the off season, during season, and leading up to the week, and going into the week, and going to that game. I just trust myself that no matter who's in front of me, I'm going to get the job done. No matter what the route is, no matter if I have to block, if I have to go inside, if I have to go outside, I trust what I've been taught, what I've learned is good enough to go against anybody and everybody. And it's just that, like, if you're in front of me, I'm going to get around you some way, shape, or form.
Who are some guys, maybe, you know, because guys in the track, we talked about this on the broadcast, right? You know, Jay Sarah came to town, Clovis North beat him. Mm-hmm. But the track, everybody knows each other. So I'm thinking about, you know, that Clovis North and Jay Sarah team, they probably weren't real familiar with each other. Mm-hmm. Jay Sarah didn't know quite what to expect. But then track, everybody kind of knows everybody,
yeah.
Right? Who are some dudes that you've enjoyed competing against over the last 4 years?
I would definitely say a person that stands out to me most is my good friend Jordan Pierre from Clovis West. Every time we line up and go against each other, it's always a good matchup because I know he's going to give me 110%. I'm going to give him 110%. He may win some. I may lose some. And it's going to go back and forth all the time. He's definitely a person who I enjoy competing against a lot.
So you mentioned Marquez, and you said dog right away.
Yes.
He's a dog. Who are some other dogs on the team that you love?
David Bell, number 4. He runs hard. David Bell, he's a great running back. Brandon Smith, great running back.
Sophomore.
Yes.
Bell's a junior, yeah.
On our defense, our inside linebacker, Aiden Chavez, he's a hard hitter. he's a great hard hitter right there. Who else can I mention? EJ, he's a great deep threat. Zeb White, he can get open, catch the fade ball. Noel Felix,
yeah.
Every time we line up in the red zone, you know, there's going to be safety over the top, ready to go help against Noel because as soon as you get in the red zone, you know, oh, all right, number 12, he's probably going to get the ball. So on the O-line, Tyson Cook, he's a great tackle for us. He's a big body, and he really moves people, and he's only a sophomore as well, too.
What do you love playing with your teammates? Like, what do you love most? Do you love locker rooms? Do you love, you know, times after practice? Do you love warm-ups? Do you love being in the games? Like, what part of playing for Central do you love the most?
I'd definitely say the locker room because it builds, like, a really good camaraderie and a good culture, and everyone just loves everyone. We're just so close together, team. Like, we really bond. We're like a family this year. And outside of season, we did a lot of stuff. Like, we went to Hume Lake as a team. We had some team bonding trips. We've done a lot together to be really close as a team. That's made us, like, enjoy being around each other a lot more. And it's just really fun. And pregame, on the sidelines of the team, getting juiced, getting amped in the huddles, before the play, after the play, it's just a lot of fun all around.
What's the hype music? What hype music do you listen to, if any?
We listen to some we listen to like Lil Baby, Lil Durk. We listen to this guy EBK J-Bo. That's one of our main guys that we listen to. When he comes on, everyone gets locked in.
I would go back a little bit, Braylon. You guys suffered those two losses in a row. You lost to Liberty 35-14 over there, and then that Clovis lost. to open up league at home, 38-37 in overtime. Did that Clovis game? You guys are, I mean, right now you guys are playing lights out.
Correct.
You guys are playing lights out football. Did that Clovis loss, did that kind of light a fire in you guys?
I would definitely say so, because we all knew after that game, after the defeat, like, that was a loss we should not have taken. Like, we were all disappointed ourselves. Like, we knew we beat ourselves. They didn't beat us. We beat ourselves. Turned the ball over. Didn't make plays when we were supposed to. And we were just disappointed. We knew that if we want to win track, or if we want to have a chance to keep going and going deep, we have to win the rest of these games and play lights out and do what we got to do week in and week out.
So, Liberty, I don't know if you saw, but Frontier beat them.
I did.
Last night.
I did see that.
Did that surprise you? Because I mean, I've been following Frontier all year. Saw Liberty play against Buchanan. You guys obviously lost to them there. Did that loss surprise you?
You know, Frontier's a really good team, and obviously so is Liberty. I mean, they won state championships last year and had a lot of success. But Liberty's quarterback being out was definitely huge for them too, I would say. Yeah. But it wasn't too surprising, because the game could have gone either way, because we played Frontier at Fresno State for the 7-on-7 tournament, and they had a lot of dudes. They were legit. So it was a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. So it was just a really good game. It was a shocker, definitely, to say the least. But the way Liberty hung there and played the whole entire game, despite having guys hurt or injured and having their starting quarterback out, was really impressive to me.
Well, Liberty is always disciplined. They rarely make mistakes. And, you know, they're two-time Central Section champs,
exactly.
State champs as well. Your relationship with Coach Biggs. Coach Biggs is an offensive guru, man. He
yes.
knows how to pick apart defenses. And, you know, do you ever suggest a play to him, or is that kind of off limits? Hey, Biggs, what about
oh,
this?
Oh, no, for sure. Biggs could tell you himself. I'll go to the sideline or up in the field, look at Biggs like, hey, like, Biggs, call this. Like, safety's doing this, corner's doing that, this or that. Like, this play will work. Sometimes he listens, sometimes he doesn't, you know, and just depends on how the game's going. If he wants to listen to my suggestion, if he doesn't, but sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. It just depends on the way the game's going.
And if the game's going really good, if you guys are rolling, you're like, okay, Biggs might listen to you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Let's go back a little bit with you, Braylon. Talking with Braylon Hall of Central. Did you grow up playing soccer, football, basketball first, or what was that progression?
So growing up as a young kid, I played soccer. That was one of my first sports I ever played. And I did a little t-ball, of course.
Yeah.
Played basketball. Basketball has actually been my main sport, like, forever. I didn't start playing football till maybe fifth or sixth grade, and I didn't start playing receiver till seventh grade. And basketball was all I knew. Ball was life. That was it. I was never a big football guy. I was never really into it until middle school, and I realized, I was like, you know, I'm probably not going to be 6'4", 6'5", you know. Let me stick to this football thing. And I eventually got better and better, and eventually just stuck with football, and here I am today.
So basketball, were you a shooter? Were you a slasher?
Oh,
what could you do?
I was a point guard. I could do it all. I was great. I was a great facilitator. I was great at driving. I was a lefty too, which people hated.
All
they
right.
they hated guarding me because I was a left. All the coaches forced him to his right. He can't use the right. Force him to his right.
Could you dribble with your right or not that good?
You know, had some games I was better than others. Not the greatest, but it did enough. It served its purpose.
But in T-ball, would you hit left-handed as well?
Yes,
you're
yes.
Lefty,
lefty
through and
lefty through. And through.
And you right left-handed as well?
Everything.
Sign your autographs. Have you ever signed an autograph?
I actually have one time. A little kid after a game asked me to – it was either his shirt or his glove he wanted me to sign, and signed it for him.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's awesome. If you could play another sport in high school, what would you play?
Basketball, for sure.
Yeah. I think you just – yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I never got the chance to play it in high school because three sports would be a lot to juggle with, doing track as well.
Okay.
So basketball is a sport you have to be really dedicated and, like, perfect your craft. Cause,
well, in summers too, right?
Exactly.
You're going to go back and forth. Yeah.
Exactly. Every workout, everything matters with basketball, ball handling, shooting, all those things. But if I could definitely play another sport, for sure it would be basketball.
What's your favorite uniform combination the Central
Ooh.
Wears? You like the black?
There's a lot.
Thursday was pretty sweet. I like that.
See, there's something about our orange, white, orange.
I really
love it. The guys don't like the orange helmets too much because we don't have the fanciest, like, newest helmets. Because in our black helmets, everyone has their own, like, the F7s, the Speed Flexes,
okay.
the newer, better ones. And the orange ones, we have just a bunch of Speeds, like the regular old school helmets. And, like, there's some new ones. But the orange white orange combo or the all black with the Jordan uniforms would definitely have to be my top two. I can't decide between those or even when we go black white black. I really like that combo a lot.
Where's the orange on the black white black? Is there an orange stripe or
anywhere? It's a little stripe on the right, side stripe and on the side. Jersey too.
Yeah, I'm okay with the I like the black. I like the black, but
can never go wrong with it.
I like classic orange. I like classic looks.
Yeah.
I like classic looks. Classic orange looks pretty sweet. Who are some of your NFL or college receivers that you like, that you like to watch?
College, definitely my center guys. Jeremiah Hunter, Xavier Worthy, dominated, knew what they do. Really like watching Jim McMillan. Marvin Harrison Jr., he's a beast.
Yeah.
Keon Coleman, Florida State, really good. Malik Nabers, really like watching him too. Luther Burden from Missouri, I want to say. I'm pretty sure. Those are some dudes I really like to watch a lot, for sure. And then as far as NFL, I really like watching Jamar Chase, Stephon Diggs, Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen is a person that I like. When people ask me, who do you feel like you play like? Who do you like to watch? I definitely say Keenan Allen because he's not the quickest. He's not the fastest, but he's a great route runner. He has great hands. He has great after-the-catch ability. So that's definitely someone who I model my game after a lot.
Talking with Braylon Hall at Central, and I think you nailed it. I think he made it with Keelan Allen, yeah. Right? He's not a great – he doesn't – nothing to, stands out.
Exactly.
But he just runs incredible routes. How about college? What's your interest in college right now?
College-wise, I have interest from Cal Poly, Southern Utah as of last week, UC Davis, and I have an offer from Western Colorado as well.
Awesome. I know on that Thursday game, you probably saw it. Maybe some of the guys were talking. Fresno State coaches were there on the sidelines, Skipper and Pat McCann, offensive coordinator. So that was really cool. They got to see you firsthand. They got to see you ball out. So
exactly.
That was awesome. That was awesome to see. Tattoos. You came in. You're wearing your shorts. You got a couple awesome tattoos on your leg. One says against all odds right above your knee. And then the one on your calf. Just kind of explain to people the meaning behind it and what you decided to put there.
So on my calf, I have a tattoo that reads Psalms 23:1-6, and it's a image of a man walking a staircase from lightness to darkness. And the phrase or the saying Psalms 23:1-6 means, "As I walk the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. And coming through the valley of the shadow of death, come good faith, good fortune, good virtue." And what that means to me is, no matter what you go through, no matter what obstacles you have in life, you always there'll always be something on the other side that's better than what you're going through. So you just got to keep persevering, keep pushing forward, and just know that there's better days ahead.
That's awesome. It's going to stick with you for a while. Brandon, we got about another minute or so. Next Thursday, yes. Clovis North.
Big game,
right?
Game.
So you guys are 3-1 in the track. Clovis North is 4-0. It's a Thursday night game at Veterans Memorial Stadium. Mm-hmm. How hyped are you for that game? It's kind of a different – a tale of two different teams as far as the style, but what do the Central Grizzlies have to do to beat Clovis North?
Biggest thing is we gotta match their physicality. That's for sure. Everyone knows they're a smash mouth football. We just gotta be as physical as them if we want to have a chance. And gotta execute on offense, can't turn the ball over, and finish drives in the red zone. Those are the main keys for sure. And like I always say with Coach Biggs, after the Clovis High game and going into the Buchanan game and Clovis West and Clovis East, we just got to play with a lot of energy and a lot of effort, 110%.
That's awesome. Can't wait for that. I want to go back a tiny bit. We got a couple minutes, actually.
Gotcha. Extended.
You're doing a great job. Great interview. Love talking with you.
Thank you.
That crazy game against Clovis East.
Oh, boy.
58-53, right? How do you just – was it just like, all right, we'll score a touchdown. All right, you score a touchdown. All right.
It was kind of like I don't know if you remember a few weeks. It was maybe like last week or the week before that LSU and Ole Miss game.
Yeah.
We were just going back and forth. We knew going into the game that they're a big play team. If you don't stop them, they're going to score. So, I believe they scored first, I want to say. I don't remember who scored first. But we knew as soon as they scored first, we scored. From that moment on, we knew it was going to be a shootout. We knew it was going to be a battle. We knew – going into the game, my athletic counselor I talked to, Shamika Conway, I told her, we always do game day predictions and stuff. We always talk about the game. She's like, Brown, how do you think the game's going to go? I told her, I said, whoever has the ball last is going to win. And we had the ball last, and we ended up winning.
58-55, and no overtimes in that one. That's a 113 total points in that game. But Braylon, good luck the rest of the way. You know, I've watched you compete for the last 3 years. You're a special player. You just make plays. You make plays, and you're an asset to your football team. You're a great teammate. So really enjoyed talking to you, get to know you, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. A lot of fun. It's Braylon Hall. Has over 1,000 yards already, 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns on the season. Any college that gets him is going to get a great get for sure. But, hey, season's not over. Senior year, he's got a lot of football left, and hopefully the Grizzlies will make a nice run throughout the Central Section playoffs. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to be talking, hey, let's talk about that game against Clovis West with Gabe Camarillo, much, much more on 1430 ESPN. Had a great interview with Braylon Hall of Central. Man, what an outstanding young man. He's a stud on the football field. Has over 1,000 yards receiving, 12 touchdowns. Didn't catch a touchdown in their win against Clovis West, but, you know, a lot of people were talking. He was the best wide receiver on the field Thursday. You're talking about some really good players that were on the field, especially for Clovis West, but he stood out. He stood out, number 18. You got to count for number 18. Wherever he is on the field, though, if you guys miss any part of any interview, want to go back and listen, you could go to the 1430ESPNFresno.com website under podcasts. Just click on the Central Valley Sports Report, and they're all right there. You could even skip parts. You could listen at whatever part you want to. Also, Gabe Camarillo's show, Home Field Advantage. Hey, I listen to the show. I'm a fan. I've been on his show. Gabe does an incredible job on Twitter, getting out information. He writes article on the website. Gabe's joining us now. Gabe, man, what an impressive player Braylon Hall is on the field and off the field. I was just totally impressed by what he did Thursday and then also today with the interview. And he definitely stood out in their 27-15 win against Clovis West.
I feel like he stood out, and the whole Grizzly team stood out, especially on defense, getting two interceptions. But on Braylon Hall, though, I feel like it's been a long time coming for this recognition. He's deserved it ever since he started as a freshman 3 years ago. And you think about that fact that he's a four-year varsity starter, no surprise to see now that he is a senior playing some of his last games as a high school football player, he's having his best games.
Yeah, and he mentioned some of the studs in the past. Jeremiah Hunter, who's at Cal, and Xavier Worthy, a preseason All-American at Texas. He's most likely an NFL guy. And, you know, those are guys that he grew up watching and probably idolizing. And he wants, you know, he's got a goal to be, you know, just as good as he can be, first of all. And I think any college that gets him is going to get a really, really good player. I want to talk more about that game, Gabe. Clovis West, let's start with them a little bit. So they were preseason number 2 in most people's polls. Liberty was 1, and now Clovis West is 1-3 in the track. Central, a lot of people didn't know about them coming into the year, how good they were going to be, but they've definitely proved that they're 3-1. What did Clovis West do really well in that game, and what was the deciding factor in Clovis West not winning that football game?
I felt Clovis West did a good job in the third quarter. We're getting in rhythm, and it was very evident what their game plan was to start the second half. They had two runs on first and second down, then they would throw on third down, and they would convert on third down, which I felt like they definitely leaned on the run more than I've seen them do in recent games with the new running back there, Macias, for Clovis West, number 22. And I'm curious to see if he comes in next week against Clovis and runs a lot as well. But I felt they got a rhythm in the third quarter, and that's how they took the lead, 15-14. But turnovers was what did them in the second half. You fall behind 20-15, okay, that's going to happen when you face a good offense like Central. It's about how do you answer back. And they, I think, either cross midfield or were getting across midfield when the third down interception that was turned into a pick six was thrown to Jamari Carter. Great play by him. We ran 55 yards, reverse field. I thought he would get tackled, so I wasn't really, you know, paying attention to it. Then I look up from my notes, and all of a sudden he's striding to the end zone with a convoy of Grizzlies. So that was the game-changing play, no doubt about it. A couple, you know, balls that hit the hands of Clovis West receivers where you're like, oh, man, that if that was a big catch, that would have been, you know, putting Clovis West in big territory, you know, deep into Central territory. But I just felt like overall the offense that we talked a lot about going into the season, it was inconsistent on Thursday for Clovis West. I got to be honest, right? We talked a lot about how this Clovis West offense and Air West is going to be high-flying and potent, and it just that wasn't enough. 15 points is not enough to beat most teams in the Valley, especially not a team like Central.
And for the Grizzlies, like I mentioned, we weren't quite sure what they were going to have coming into the season, and they've gone through a couple quarterbacks. Earl Riley did a great job at the beginning of the year. Was thrown for a lot of touchdowns, but the coaching staff decided to go with David Marquez and felt like the last couple games especially their offense has clicked. Marquez's completion percentage at 72%, he's thrown 9 touchdowns on the season, only 2 interceptions. I feel like they got a little extra juice with Marquez playing the quarterback position. They look like a team on a mission, especially after that Clovis loss.
And I only had one question about Central going into Thursday night's game, and that was defense, because they gave up 55 points to Clovis East, and obviously they won with 58 points, so didn't really matter. But the defense, I thought, okay, well, if they give up 55 to Clovis East, they're going to face a Clovis West offense that has a lot of Division I talent. But I don't know if it was just Clovis West not reaching their standard or Central defense playing really well. I don't know which one it was, but how does the Central defense go from giving up 55 points to Clovis East to 15 points to Clovis West?
Ty Miller is a really good quarterback for Clovis East, and I think he had 500 yards of total offense in that one. I felt like Central, Gabe, in against Clovis West did a good job defensively, rotating guys around defensively, showed a couple different coverages. They tackled in space really well. The linebackers did a good job of rolling over some of those intermediate passes. It didn't work out like Clovis West did. They got some chunk plays talking about Clovis West early, and I'm like, okay, they figured a few things out, but Central's defense made some really, really nice adjustments in that one. So, Gabe, last night we were at Collegian Stadium to watch Justin Garza and San Joaquin Memorial. Garza came out with a 38-10 win. It was a shutout for the Garza defense in the second half. Caleb Matthews had a really nice game, 4 touchdown passes, 1 rushing touchdown. But the defense, I think they had 3 interceptions. Does that sound right, Gabe?
Yes, it does.
And probably about 2 or 3 more dropped interceptions that go back and watch the game feeling like, how the heck did you drop that? But what impressed you? What stood out to you in that Garza and Memorial game?
How kind of Garza made Memorial one-dimensional, I would say, on defense, and how they responded to that dimension. I felt going into the game that it was either going to be Garza wins it with their athleticism or Memorial wins it with their physicality. And it was the first, not the second. Although Memorial did have a good performance from Jordan Colbert, who he got a fan in me last night because of just how he got every single carry, every single catch, it seemed like. He finished the evening, let me see here, 25 carries for 124 yards. And he also caught 4 passes for 49 yards. I think he actually has a little bit more than that. But I felt like, besides Colbert, where was the offense coming for San Joaquin Memorial? And that's kind of what Garza forced them to do. Garza forced them into some 3-and-longs, and they have an inexperienced quarterback at San Joaquin Memorial who's making just his third career start. So they were able to make him run and throw, and that's where the 3 interceptions came from with Delport throwing on 3rd-and-long. So I was impressed with Garza's defense. I know Garza scored a lot offensively. Caleb Matthews gets 5 touchdowns, but the way that Garza defended San Joaquin Memorial and prevented it from becoming a shootout like I thought it would be. I said a lot about Garza's run defense going into this game because they gave up over 200 on the ground to Edison the week before, but then you look at what they did against Colbert, and they held Colbert to 5 yards a carry when he was getting more than that in the rest of the CMAC game. So overall, I mean, he got the team got 3.6 yards a carry for Memorial. If you keep Memorial down the below 4 yards a carry, you're going to win that game.
Yeah, they ran the ball 33 times as a team for 119 yards. Yeah, Colbert, he was impressive, man. And, it's talking about Hunter Babb, where Coach Nolte of Liberty Madera said, yeah, we know it's coming, but we had trouble stopping it. But Colbert, he's physical. It took 2 or 3 Justin Garza defenders to bring that kid down. You always have to account for number 4. So congrats to Justin Garza on that big win. Gabe, any other games stand out to you? Obviously, let's talk a little bit about Frontier and Liberty. We know those are obviously Bakersfield schools, but those two teams are going to be high seeds most likely in the division playoffs. We're going to talk about those, how they break down in just a second. But hey, Frontier, they beat the streak, didn't they?
They did. And I was reading Ron Stapp's write up in the Californian this morning. Malachi Statler had a 49-yard touchdown pass to Kobe Watson in the fourth quarter, and then Kobe Watson got the game-winning interception on Liberty's last drive. So, yeah, Frontier slays the beast. They beat Liberty, and they rocket themselves from the 8th seed right now, from the 8th seed yesterday to right now the number 2 seed in Division I. And that's a huge jump that's much deserved for the Frontier Titans, which they answer the big question of, who did they play that prepared them for this game, right? Were they battle-tested enough? Was their schedule strong enough? They answered all those questions by beating the two-time defending Central Section champions. And kind of like what happened last year when Liberty lost, there's already excuses coming out. Okay, last year it was the lightning and it was the weather that kept Liberty from winning. This year, it's the fact that they didn't have a quarterback and that they were down, I hear, their UNLV commit. Excuses. Liberty lost. They still had most of their team. They didn't. How big of a difference do you think the quarterback actually made not having Cole O'Brien?
I think it made a difference. But yeah, I don't think teams care, right? So Central Section teams don't really care about other teams and their injuries. There's no excuses in this league. So yeah, I misspoke, Gabe. It looks like there's 30 straight wins for Liberty. I said 37, but you tweeted it out. Was it 30 straight wins?
I counted 30, yes. Okay. I know the Curtin High Network guy said 31, but I went through and I thought there was 30. It doesn't matter. It was a long winning streak that Liberty had in that league going back to 2016.
So switching gears a tiny bit, let's go back to the track. It's almost unthinkable that Buchanan might not make the playoffs this year. They're 2-7 right now, face Clovis East, who's probably playing like a team on a mission after that Central loss. I mean, is that surprising to you? Where does Buchanan stand right now? It's almost unthinkable that they're not going to be in the playoffs.
I feel like this actually might be good for one reason. If Buchanan were to make the playoffs, they would be in Division II, which, do you think a 3-7 Buchanan football team should be in Division II? Probably not. So, I mean, it's not good for the Buchanan Bears, right? But for the sake of Central Section football and the integrity of the playoffs, you know, not having Buchanan in Division II is a good thing, because then you would have them face like a Tehachapi or them face San Luis Obispo, and that should never happen. But as far as am I surprised, I thought they would. I thought they would win 3 games in the non-league slate, and I think I had those 3 wins earmarked as that St. Pius game, the San Joaquin Memorial game, considering how Memorial's down. And I thought that they would be Escalon, or not Escalon. I'm thinking of, it was Escalon. Yeah, it was Escalon. Yeah, yeah. The team that they lost to in the last seconds on a field goal. So that last-second field goal is going to cost them a postseason trip. I don't look at what's happening in track play, because we did think, and we both projected accurately, that this Buchanan team would likely pull up the rear in the track just because of how much they lost and how young their defense is. So, you know, it happens. It's cyclical. There's ebbs and flows, ups and downs, valleys and peaks. It happens to everyone, unless you're able to get a consistent flow of transfers in. But I think Buchanan, this isn't something that is only Buchanan. Bullard's going through it too. There's other schools that go through these cycles where you're just very young and going to struggle for a season.
And yeah, and they, again, how do we explain them playing Liberty so tough, 35-30 loss? And then, I thought that Buchanan would at least win 2 football games in the track. But anyway, let's talk about those playoffs, Gabe. I'm hitting the refresh button like every 5 minutes on Cal Preps to see where some of these teams shake out. So let me refresh one more time. But Clovis North right now is the clear-cut number 1. However, again, like we mentioned, they're going to be playing Central on Thursday for the track championship. I'm going to be super excited about that. But it looks like Clovis East is number 2 listed on here. And then you got Frontier, Liberty, Central at 5. Sanger looks like they dropped a spot, even though they won, at 6. Clovis at 7. Clovis West at 8. Talking about Division I teams. Hanford then is at 10. Rio Grande at 11. And St. Joe's, and then there's a couple question marks. So if this holds, Gabe, is Clovis East, if they win next week, are they locked in at number 2?
They will not be. They'll actually be number 5 through a series of tiebreakers that I'll explain. Clovis East cannot be seated above Liberty. So let's start there. Right? Clovis East cannot be seated above Liberty because Clovis East lost to Central, which Liberty beat. So because Liberty beat Central, Liberty gets to be ahead of Clovis East. And you can't put Central behind Clovis East, because that's not fair. Central beat Clovis East, so Central gets to be seated above Clovis East, and you got to put Frontier above Liberty because they just beat Liberty. So you got Clovis North, Frontier, Liberty, Central, Clovis East as your top 5 seeds, and then I believe the next 3 teams are accurate in Cal Preps: Sanger at 6, Clovis at 7, Clovis West at 8.
Okay, so what about Clovis? Because right now they are below Central, but it doesn't matter.
Well, because there's two teams ahead of them that beat them. If you put Clovis ahead of Central, you have to put Central behind Clovis East, and that's not fair because Central beat Clovis East. And you have to put Central behind Sanger. That's not fair because Central beat Clovis East, which beat Sanger. So unfortunately for Clovis, their head-to-head win over Central doesn't matter because they lost head-to-head to two other teams ahead of them, Clovis East and Sanger.
Wow, that's pretty wild. So we're still thinking top four seeds get by up to 12, correct?
Yes, and Garces right now is the 12th seed.
Okay, 12th seed for Garces. Is there another team that's on the bubble for Division One?
Centennial, but there's no way Centennial can leapfrog Garces because Garces just beat Centennial. Redwood can't leapfrog Centennial because Redwood lost to Centennial. So I would say if it is a 12-team bracket, Garces is pretty locked in there as a 12th seed.
Okay, so Division Two, CVC right now is 1, Lemoore is 2, Centennial 3, and Redwood 4. Does that sound about right?
That sounds right, yes.
How about Division Three? What are we looking at?
Right now we're looking at Mission Prep, Atascadero, Mission Oak as your top three seeds. Madera drops down to Division Three, and in an unfortunate twist for Garza, because they beat San Joaquin Memorial, two things happened. First, San Joaquin Memorial is on the outside looking in, and they need a lot of help to make the playoffs. I know they have three wins, but they might lose to Sanger. And you know, I think they'll be the big underdog against Sanger this year. And Bullard, if they beat Edison, they can make Division Two. But Bullard is so far ahead right now of a Memorial, it's kind of crazy to think about, because Memorial beat Bullard, right? Memorial beat Bullard last weekend, and now Bullard's way ahead of Memorial, where even with the tiebreakers involved, there's no tiebreaker between Bullard and Memorial because they're that far apart in the Cal Preps rankings. Garza has to be ahead of Bullard because Garza beat Bullard. I think if Bullard qualifies for the postseason and plays in Division II, Garza's going to be in Division II. But if Bullard doesn't qualify or doesn't opt into the playoffs, then maybe they put Garza in Division III and make it a 12-team D2 bracket. This is much more explainable when you're able to read it instead of say it over the air.
But you're doing a great job.
I think overall, like, the big if for Week 11 is where does Garza go? Because Garza right now is a Division II team.
Yeah.
And that it's because they beat Bullard. If they didn't beat Bullard, maybe they're able to drop down to Division III, but they're a Division II team right now. And then Kerman and Madera, they're going to be the 8-9 matchup. Madera, they dropped down from D2 to D3 just by watching Garza beat Memorial. I think that's probably what led to that happening. But, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Kind of crazy how all these things change just because of a couple games. And makes you wonder, right, what did Garza do to warrant going from Division III to Division II? They beat San Joaquin Memorial, which is a down team this year. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Does beating San Joaquin Memorial prove that you're Division II when you already have lost to other schools that are in Division II and also a school that's in Division IV?
Well, I know just watching Justin Garza last night with my own eyeballs, they look like a Division II team. They got a nice roster. Their offensive line played really, really good last night. So, yeah. And what about Madera, right? Is Madera going to be – I think you mentioned a little bit. Is Madera most likely going to be Division III?
I think so, because the only reason they were in Division II was San Joaquin Memorial being in Division II. If Memorial's in Division II, you have to have Madera ahead of them and Garza ahead of them, right? Because that's just the way the tiebreakers work. But because Memorial is seriously in danger of not making the playoffs, there are several spots out of Division II, and like I said, it's so far out that even Bullard's above them right now, despite Bullard losing to Memorial. This is just right now the best case scenario for Madera. Memorial, if they're not in the postseason, Madera's going to be in D3. If they are in the postseason, Madera's going to be in D2.
And how about Division IV? Man, I think Division IV is going to be a grind. It's going to be one of those divisions that, hey, I could see a lot of different teams winning it. So we got Shafter, Dos Palos, Exeter, Kalinga, Torres, Carruthers, McLean. Then you got Sierra Pacific in there as well, and Liberty Madera, and Chowchilla. I mean, that seems like a loaded Division IV, doesn't it?
It does, but part of me thinks, okay, yeah, it's a lot of really good teams, but I think Shafter might be a bit above the rest. They have two wins over Division II teams, Bakersfield and Bakersfield Christian, and a win over a Division III team in Kennedy. No other Division IV team has that. So Shafter's played the better competition to the point where I'm thinking this is Shafter's to lose. And I think, honestly, this might be a hot take, but they're a heavy favorite. I think they win every game by a touchdown or more. I don't think there's any close games in D4 as long as Shafter's playing in that game. Because, Paul, like I said, they beat two Division II teams. They beat a Division III team.
Yeah.
This is like if Fresno State were to beat three Pac-12 teams and then play for the Mountain West Championship. Fresno State beat three Pac-12 teams, so they should win a Mountain West Championship, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you and I have ranked Shafter, you know, around the 13, 14, 15, 16 slot overall, right? And I think that's a testament to what Coach Perucci is doing there at Shafter. Division 5, what are we looking at, Gabe, for Division 5?
I think Bishop Union is looking like the top team right now, and then Arosi just lost to Woodlake, so haven't yet gotten down to that part of the bracket yet, but I do expect Arosi to drop a little bit in Division 5.
Yeah, Emmanuel's got a lot of their guys eligible in the last couple games. They had, they lost to Exeter. Exeter, I believe, scored 53 points against them, but Emmanuel could look pretty strong. And then in Division 6, we got schools like Fireball and Woodlake with that big win over Rosie Fowler. Hey, Fowler with their quarterback is, that's a team to contend with, an Orange Cove and Avenel as well. Okay, Gabe, good job by you. Any last thoughts before we take our final commercial break?
No, just bye week this week for Fresno State, so I don't know what to do with myself.
College football, man.
Yeah, right. But I'm not really a big college football fan if Fresno State's not involved. Like, I'll watch it if it's a huge game, like if it's, you know, Washington, Oregon, or I guess I'll put on Alabama versus the flavor of the month in the SEC, whichever team we think is going to beat them. But if it's not those big games, I'm not one to sit and watch, like, Air Force Navy right now.
All right, well, one last question, Gabe. I'm going to put you on the spot. Is it possible, when all this shakes out, talking about Division One, mm-hmm. that a 5 or 6 or maybe even a 7 seed could find themselves in the Central Section Championship game?
A 5, 6, or 7 seed. So we're talking right now about teams like Sanger, teams like Clovis East, and teams like Clovis. I think Clovis East is pretty locked into a 5 seed. I could totally see Clovis East beating Central in a rematch at Central and then beating Clovis North. Yeah, I could see Clovis East as a 5 seed. Clovis East might be the best 5 seed in the history of the Central Section with how much talent that they have. So I could see that happening, yeah.
And I heard that Harold Duvall had a monster game last night doing it on both sides of the ball. That kid's an incredible football player. Hey, and I know Clovis West has had their problems. They're 1-3. However, they're going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs because you could go from the angle of, man, nobody believes in us now. We got nothing to lose. Let's just go ahead and win the whole thing.
If their offense is firing on all cylinders like it was a couple weeks ago against, Buchanan? Or North 2. Yeah, North 2. If their offense is at high-level play, then yes. But like I said, it was a bit inconsistent against Central, and that's a little bit worrisome because you want to get those things worked out before the playoffs in a couple weeks.
So Clovis North looking strong, Frontier undefeated as well. And, hey, Liberty is still the defending champ. So one more week, Gabe, one more week, and the season's over. Then we could really talk about the playoffs and the matchups and all that fun stuff that comes with it. Thanks, Gabe. Awesome as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you, Paul.
All right, we'll take a final break and wrap everything up on 1430 ESPN. Sounds a little bit like Nirvana, Team Spirit. Hey, what a great show we had today. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Joe Gomez, Gabe Camarillo, listen to him on Home Field Advantage, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5, Mike Nolte, Liberty Madera coach, Cam Worrell, Braylon Hall of Central. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to the home of the San Francisco Giants, KCRA.